Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Friday, July 14th, another beautiful summer July day here in Dallas, Texas. It's going to get in the 90s, but it always gets into the 90s, even sometimes into triple digits here in Dallas, Texas. We salute everyone from the beautiful city of Dallas, Texas. Today, we're going to talk about some of the big stories in the news. I've got some thoughts about Obamacare and the GOP, a couple of more thoughts about this Russia story that it gets dizzy after a while, to be honest with you. It just gets dizzy. It's like, you know, what are we talking about? You know, what are we talking about? It just gets dizzy after a while. They're throwing so many things at you, and they may actually be better off if they would just stop talking about it for 2 or 3 weeks. I think they may find that people might be interested if they don't talk about it. But it's every day, every little thing going on. I'm just completely dizzy. We're also going to look at a couple of big stories down in Latin America, in Venezuela, and in Brazil. And let's begin with Brazil. I have a post over at the American Thinker this morning, Friday, where I talk about what they're calling Operation Car Wash in Brazil. Operation Car Wash is a very great name that the prosecutors in Brazil came up with to clean up the political class. As you, I'm sure, have heard from some of our shows and maybe some of the writings that we've done about Brazil, Brazil is a very corrupt country, corrupt in the sense of crony capitalism, where you basically have a political class in bed with big businesses and in bed with the big public sector unions. So it's kind of a corrupt relationship between these three big organizations, the big unions, the big businesses, and the political class. And it works real well as long as the economy is doing well. So when the economy in Brazil was doing well for several years, the commodity prices were up, the Brazilian middle class was happy, everybody was making money, everybody was great, well, nobody cared about the corruption. But Brazil right now is undergoing a very severe recession. Unemployment is high. The middle class is angry. And then, of course, all of this corruption has a way of creeping out when people are angry. And former president of Brazil, he has a very long name. Let's just call him Lula. That's what everybody calls him, Lula. He was a very popular president of Brazil. He came from the Workers' Party, which is, I guess, the left-of-center party. But he became very popular because he sort of projected a centrist image around the world, and the investors fell in love with him. The unions fell in love with him. He was sort of seen as this kind of guy who could work with everybody and get things done. Of course, that was when commodity prices were doing very well and the Brazilian economy was booming. Well, it's not so much like that anymore. In fact, he has just been found guilty of corruption. He's going to probably spend about 10 years in jail. And he's not the only one. There's a lot of other politicians who are going through this car wash that I was talking about. And I actually think this is good for Brazil. And it's good for Latin America to have a big political figure like this to be arrested and found guilty of corruption. I think it's a good thing. It sort of reinforces the whole idea of the rule of law, that just because you're big, it doesn't mean you can get rich by using government. And I think it's a good thing. I really do. And I hope that out of this comes an atmosphere where the Brazilian people care a great deal more about their corruption and their government. And I just think it's a good thing. I really do. So kudos to the political or judicial system in Brazil for putting Mr. Lula through the car wash and finding him guilty, because he is guilty. He's guilty of very significant corruption. And frankly, making a ton of money as president and directing a lot of contracts to his friends and so on. So, yes, I think it's a good thing that he was found guilty. Over in Venezuela, there is the release of a very famous political prisoner, Leopoldo López, who was an opponent of the Maduro government. And when I heard about the release, and I have a post about this coming out this weekend, when I heard about the release, I felt kind of good about it because I said, well, that's good. This guy has been in prison for quite some time, and frankly, there's no reason for him to be in prison. He's just a political opponent. But then I learned that it wasn't quite total freedom. He's sort of under house arrest. And then I was talking to a friend of mine from Venezuela. He lives in Miami. And I said, what do you make of this? What do you make of the early release? Why do you think Maduro did it? He said, number one, it's probably public relations. He is under a lot of pressure from the other members of the Organization of the American States. I'm sure the United States as well as other countries around the world. He's under a lot of pressure to release this guy. So he may have done it for public relations and maybe buy a little time, if you will, by releasing him. The other reason is that these marches and these demonstrations may finally be, achieving something. I mean, as you know, Venezuela has been the ground zero for some very serious anti-government demonstrations here for the last several months. So we don't exactly know why he did it. I'm still up in the air. We'll check on it. We're going to do a show about Venezuela probably next week, and we'll try to get a better response. But I think for the moment, I'm glad that Leopoldo López was released because, as I said, he's a good man. He's a good man, and he has a young family, and the idea that he's been separated from his kids and his wife for purely political reasons, it's something that, frankly, makes me very angry that, we're putting people in prison because we disagree with them politically. So I'm glad that he was released, but I'm sure there's a lot more to the story that we need to learn. Just very quickly, I just wanted to tell you that we had some great shows this week that I want you to check in the archives. We spoke with Professor Bonnevac on Monday about the Trump speech. We talked about Russia and the overall political situation on Tuesday with Barry Castleman. And then we had a great show yesterday with Leslie Eastman of Legal Insurrection. We talked about a lot of issues, obviously, related to the Trump administration. These shows are in the archives, so all you got to do is scroll down in the archives and check them out, and I think you will see all of them. But they're very good shows. We had especially the one with Professor Bonnevac and the Trump speech in Poland. I thought that was an absolutely marvelous program. Professor Bonnevac, of course, professor of philosophy at the University of Texas, a great conservative and just a great guest of our show. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Quevez, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Make sure you catch my good friend Carlos Guedes at NOLA on Saturday nights here in Dallas. It's great food and great music. NOLA, N-O-L-A, right there in downtown Dallas. Well, let's talk a little bit about President Trump in France. A lot of people are reacting to the trip saying, gee, he's getting along so well with President Macron. Well, yeah, he is. And a lot of it is because President Macron needs President Trump, and he needs them this way. The American economy has to start growing. The French economy is pretty much stagnant, overregulated, overtaxed. They've got like 20% unemployment for young people. It's a country that is right now sort of stuck in a socialist hole, if I could put it that way. They're not growing. Their people are overtaxed. Their health care, their universal health care, is actually right now running out of cash. And a lot of people are sort of talking about universal health care in the United States. Well, check out France before you jump on that wagon. And then, of course, they have these very generous welfare benefits that, again, they're running out of cash. So Mr. Macron needs an American economy growing to get in motion the international economy, because when we're growing at 4 or 5%, the world is a lot happy with us. When we're growing at 1%, the world is not growing. So this is where I think this relationship between Mr. Macron and Trump is coming from. He also, by the way, Mr. Macron, he needs help with terrorism. In many ways, France has become ground zero for terrorism, these terrible attacks in Paris and Nice and in other places, and he needs help. He needs help, and he knows he's going to have to work with the United States in this area. So I actually felt pretty good about President Trump in France, and I'm glad that President Macron wants to work with him. I know they differ on climate change, but I don't think climate change is what really matters to President Macron right now. He's got to get that economy going because he's got a real problem with youth unemployment. I don't know how else to say it. But when you have a bunch of people in their 20s, a lot of young men and women in their 20s who cannot find work, that is a political problem that could explode at any moment for you. So I think you'll see Mr. Trump and Mr. Macron work together quite well. And I think you'll see other European leaders begin to realize that a healthy America, a healthy American economy, is the best friend that they have. With respect to Obamacare, look, this is with the Republicans right now. And I understand that when they campaigned calling for repeal, they didn't necessarily all spell out what replace was going to be. But at this moment, they have got to do something. They've got to move the ball forward and then send it to the House and the reconciliation. But something has to be put on President Trump's desk to repeal and replace Obamacare. As I said, I'm not hung up on details right now, but I am hung up on the fact that they made that promise and they better go through with it. As I've said before on the show, as I've said before in some of the writings that I've done, what I love to see, frankly, is repeal and then send it to the states and let the states figure it out. Every state can figure out whatever health care program they have. That's probably not going to happen, but that's what I would love to see happen. But given that my ideal situation is not going to happen, then let's try to come up with replace. Let's come up with something, and let's work it out in committee. You're not going to get any Democrats to support you, and that, of course, becomes a problem because you have to do it through reconciliation, and you got to do it with 51 votes, and that makes it more complicated. But anyway, we got to do something. We got to get this done because that's what they ran on. And if they're not going to do it, I think you're going to see a lot of these guys get primary challenges next time around. As I said, I don't want to see that happen. But if they cannot keep the promise they were making for all these years, they got to get in the room and figure this out. Because if they don't, they're really going to be in serious problem. We're going to remember today a great American, President Gerald Ford, who was born on this day in 1913. I'm sure all of you remember the story of Gerald Ford. I have a post in my blog today talking about his life. He was going to retire from politics in 1972. He was the Republican minority leader in the House. His dream, as I understand, was to be Speaker of the House, but that never materialized because the Republicans never had a majority while he was there. And he was going to retire from politics, but then Watergate sort of put him in the political scene, first as vice president and then as president. And I have always said, I remember that whole period quite well. I was in school. I have always felt that the United States was very fortunate in the summer of 1974 that Gerald R. Ford became president of the United States. He was an honest, decent man who was exactly what the country needed at that time, kind of a low-key approach, exactly what the country needed. Now, he lost in 1976 to Jimmy Carter, not technically re-election, but he ran as president. In 1976, he lost to Jimmy Carter. It was a very close election. It wasn't settled until noon of the next day. Very close election, and I remember I was pretty depressed because that was the first time I voted, and I voted for Gerald Ford. So we remember today the 38th president of the United States, Gerald Ford, one of the great Americans of the 20th century, and someone, as I said, who came on the scene exactly when the country needed somebody like Gerald Ford. So we remember Gerald Ford, born on this day in 1913. He died in 2006. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you the next time when we chat with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bye-bye, everybody.